Welcome, Jen, from Community Rewatch Podcast. Thanks for joining Six Seasons in a Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. We were having a conversation ahead of this conversation, so I wanted to move it into the real conversation. And one of the things I was saying was that I like the idea of the podcasts working together and creating a little C community. I actually like the idea of all of the creators that are doing something for community to kind of lean in and support each other. It seemed like you're on board with that.
Yeah. I mean, that was what the whole show for me was about, though, was communities helped me form community with people and with like fan art creators and the cast and writers and fans. And so I really feel like even 10 years later, it's just amazing that we're still talking about community, like, and people who we've met through community.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I'm my background or what I do, I'm kind of a digital marketer. I'm more of an analyst these days, but you know, so going into the process of saying, well, you know, if I do this podcast, like I started off real slow at the beginning in September, and then I did one in October, and then it's kind of like, well, if I'm going to really do this, I'm going to do my whole, you know, startup, you know, social media blitz. Mm-hmm. And I really started uncovering these little bastions of community fans, and started with Twitter, and then I went over to Instagram, and then I found this community Discord chat thing, which is what the kids, I don't know, do these days. And yeah. And then, you know, the subreddit, and then there's a couple Facebook groups. And so, you know, it was like, oh, this is great. You know, between all of that, there's probably, I don't know, how many active people in the subreddit, but, you know, close to, you know, 300,000-400,000 people between all of those places. And,
yeah.
You know, it's pretty cool. How many of them are really active, I'm not sure, but I'm really pleased to see, you know, people who are listening to the podcast. And, you know, so that was me, one of the reasons I really wanted to say, no, like, I don't want to just be this, you know, competitor. I want to, you know, be a little C community with you. And as I said in my tweet to you, because I am very much not going to have, I have just one perspective. I went to a community college early on and, you know, was in those kinds of study groups, but ultimately my perspective is pretty limited, and I wanted to really hear more from you. And so I've just did a long introduction. And so Jen, tell me more about your podcast and you.
Yeah. So I started watching Community after the season one finale aired. I'd seen advertisements for it. I'd watched NBC. I loved The Office, that kind of thing. And a friend of mine told me, you should really watch the show. You're really going to like it. So I thought, okay, you know, I'll give it a few episodes and I'll see if I do. I wasn't really hooked as soon as I watched it until I hit the episode, Football Sundays in a New. And then that suddenly became like the episode where I found myself laughing out loud. And I was like, okay, I think this is it. I think I'm getting what they're saying. And so I watched all of, you know, season one when the show was on hiatus, and then watched season two. And by the time season three rolled around, I was kind of in a dead-end job. And I went to school for creative writing. That's my passion. It's always been my passion. And I wasn't really doing that at my job. So I told the same friend, I was like, I think I'm going to start writing reviews of Community, because I really love the show. It's really great. It's got so much depth in it. And I said, I'm going to do it. And she's like, okay, you should do it. So I told her, oh, you're going to be the only person who ever reads these reviews. No one's ever going to read them, but whatever, I'll start a blog. So I did. And it was the episode, the second episode of season three. And I just, on a whim, was like, you know what? Go on social media, go on Twitter. I'll tweet the review to Dan Harmon. What harm could come from that? He probably won't even see it anyway. Like, he's not reading reviews. I remember reading an article that said, oh, he's not looking at reviews for the season because he doesn't want to be, you know, like, burdened by them or, like, you know, be upset by them. And I thought, okay. So I did that, went back to work, didn't think anything of it. And then I checked Twitter later, and Dan Harmon had not only read my review, but he had responded to me on Twitter and said, I just devoured that at an airport bar. It was exactly what I needed. Great job, kiddo. And that kind of just sparked people from the community fandom following me on Twitter. And I was like, I guess I'm doing reviews now of the show. So I started writing about the show, and just as like a little side project. And that side project became a website called Just About Right, W-R-I-T-E, because I'm punny like that. I wrote about the show for the rest of the series while it was on the air, and then in the sixth season on Yahoo Screen. And it's just been such a fun experience to see how much the fandom has been receptive to things. And when I was thinking about how it was 10 years later, I was like, you know, maybe I'll do a podcast about this. I mean, I have a lot of friends that I have met in real life and on social media who I met because of the show. And I kind of talked to a few of them and was like, if I do this thing, would you be interested in coming on and talking about these episodes? And they're like, absolutely. So that's kind of how the Community Rewatch podcast is born. And it's this is a very long roundabout way and also a glimpse of what you will get on our podcast, which is just us talking in depth about what we love about the show and the writing and character development and plot and all of that jazz. And doing a few fun special episodes, holiday-centric ones when time rolls around. So it's been really fun. It's just been really exciting to watch the show again, because I don't think I had rewatched it in a long time, since it went off the air in season 6. So yeah, it's great. And I love just being able to connect with other people, even 10 years later, who love the show, like you and this podcast. And it's just really exciting. I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Community. And so any chance I get to talk about it is a good one.
Yeah, that's, I love it. And I think I read part of your explanation about Dan reading your article, and I just think that's, to me, what makes Dan kind of special. And you'll get some of those moments. And he tweeted back to me one time when I asked him, probably a few years after the season four episodes had aired, and I said, you know, it's been a couple of years. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but you still really don't like these? Because I feel like there's at least a handful of these episodes that really capture the magic, still have it. And he was like, well, it's not my cup of tea. Well, it is my cup of tea, but you know, you understand.
Yeah.
And you know, I respect him, and I'm not sure if, did you listen to Harmontown much? Were you a Harmontownite at all?
I was not. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have a complicated kind of relationship with Dan Harmon based on a lot of things that have come out after the show has ended and that stuff. And, you know, I will always appreciate him for what he did for Community. I know a lot of people who watched Community followed him and his other projects. I was just never one of those people. But, you know, the fact that he helped lift my Community reviews and therefore my future website off the ground will never be lost on me. So I think it's always something that I'm, you know, at least appreciative of for that little start for me. But
yeah,
I have not listened to Harmontown at all.
Yeah, that's I'm not surprised. And I totally, I absolutely understand your perspective. And, you know, and I think that's what's kind of interesting about him, that, you know, I definitely see those ugly warts, and I think he lived them out loud with people, and I think we're certainly talking about the Megan Gans thing, and I can tell you from my perspective, it was when he did his apology I know we're getting all over the place, but I love it. I think it's going to set up the conversation about the episode. So, but when he did that, and you know, I thought it was a really meaningful apology. But what I appreciated most was Megan's response, and I really look forward to, you know, if she would want to even broach the subject. But I at least tell her that, you know, as a guy, and you know, it was really meaningful to go to just search through, especially with the Me Too moments. And it's very, very moving to just kind of step back and say, wow, you know, was I totally a cool dude to everyone that, you know, all of the women that I interacted with? And I'm sure you've had conversations with other guys and your other female friends and that kind of thing. But I just wanted to say that's where I come from. I come from a very this, you know, Dan, you know, publicly doing his thing and Megan just, you know, handling it like a champ. It just was, and I think there's other moments where Dan has failed in, and then, you know, kind of worked his way back to, worked his way through it. And so I wouldn't say that, you know, he's not an angel and you certainly, by any means, but I appreciate the journey that, that I've gone through by listening to him. And, and actually wasn't a big Dan. I was kind of, agnostic to Dan until, believe it or not, actually until his Whiting Wong's podcast in like 2018, I think it was. I had actually not really engaged with him much as like a entity until he did the podcast with Jessica Gao, and that was that moment where like it was, you know, he was deconstructing himself, and then he does this in regards to race and writers' rooms and those kinds of things. But then he goes through the Megan Gans experience, and you know, it was very, very, I was going through stuff too, like where it was, anyway. So I just, I can appreciate the moments and the complexity to it.
And I mean, Megan Gans' response is definitely something that I will always, and I will always admire Megan Gans just as a writer. Some of my favorite episodes of the show were penned by Megan Gans. She's just brilliant. I mean, she's a cooperative calligrapher. Like that brilliance is not lost on me. And knowing then behind the scenes kind of what was going on, just her resilience. And I know that she's dealt with a lot of things, but her response is incredibly classy and just indicative of the kind of person she clearly is. And, you know, we are in this age where things come out about creators and people who have made content that we love, and then we have these complicated emotions toward them because it's like, can I support this thing anymore? Can I be a fan of this thing anymore? Mm-hmm. Is this person irredeemable? Like, what do I do with this? And you have to hold that tension of, like, this person has created a thing that I love, is problematic. And that doesn't mean that this thing is bad. This doesn't mean that community is, you know, is terrible because, you know, Dan Harmon has his stuff and he created it. But, you know, that's just a conversation that I think has been so illuminating over the last, you know, couple of years and definitely decade. It's just being able to walk through that with fans of the show too, because it's, you know, kind of all came out after the show had ended, and just being able to kind of have those points of dialogue still, I think is great. I think that's what, when social media is uses powers for good, that is what we can do with it, is we can have dialogues and we can form community and we can have these discussions. And that's always great. And look, people are complex. No one is completely good. No one's completely, you know, black and white. It's most of us operate in a shade of gray, but I think that I think their responses, regardless of, you know, how you feel about who's in the right, who's in the wrong, they did respond in a way that was indicative of just, okay, that's an acceptable, classy response. And they said, okay, we're moving on now. And, left it there. So, so I appreciate that. And I definitely will, you know, appreciate Megan Gans' response too for that, mm-hmm. for that So.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, you know, I have two daughters, you know, like I said in our previous pre-conversation, two young mm-hmm. ones, 6 and 9, and I think about these things, and, I know that not every dad does, so, but I, yeah. You know, I actively pursue it, and I don't want to be told I'm wrong, I want to know when I'm wrong. And I want mm-hmm. to know, like, how I can help. And I want to know yeah. how I can you just be a good friend as a yeah. guy to every person that I interact with. And so, that's one of the reasons I wanted to, you know, make, six seasons in a podcast, be that friend to the Community Rewatch podcast. And
yeah.
And your perspective on, we can jump into the episode if you want.
Let's go for it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the Football Feminism and You episode, and mm-hmm. you know, I like to point out, I think it's, we pointed out maybe in our chat lead up to this, that it's written by Hillary Winston, so it's written by one yeah. of the female writers. Do you know anything about her? Do you have any perspective on?
I don't know much about her. I was trying to go back. I know we had this kind of conversation before. One of the things that I kind of was passionate about, I had to look it up. The article that I wrote about it was in 2014. Was just the balance of women and men in the writing room and community over the years and what that looks like, but. You know, for it to be the 6th episode and, hey, it's written by Hillary Winston, it was super great. I know she was not on staff very long, so.
Yeah, I think she might have been season 2 as well. I was doing a list of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to look that up, too, like, which, you know, one of the hard things when you look at shows is turnover with staff and new people come on and people leave all the time, which is totally normal, but it can shift the tone of a writer's room or a show. But I know a lot of women, or, you know, maybe not a lot, like a good number of them were on the show the first 2 seasons. And then by season 3, a lot of people shifted off staff to go work on other projects. And a lot of NBC projects and things like that too. A lot of comedies that, you know, I also then loved.
Yeah.
Yes, I did know that she was on a show for a shorter period of time than like Megan Gann, for instance. Mm-hmm.
I think Megan came on in season 2, and I'm not sure who, but, and there's Emily Cutler who's in season 2, and we still had Carrie.
Emily Cutler, and then you had like Steve Bacalone and Annie Medane. I'm going to butcher her last name, yeah. but they were like a writing duo that uh-huh. were on the show for a while too. So you would have her on, and believe that they wrote regional holiday music.
Awesome.
Just a few of the notable women.
Yeah. I think, one of the things that Andrew told me, Andrew Guest, season 1 and 2 writer, he did say that there was a particular, grind to the writer's room. It was a lot, you know, mm-hmm. at least one, you know, overnight every week. And you know, he was luckily he wasn't married, didn't have kids at the time. And, but he did say he got burned out after 2 seasons. And, I don't know what, you know, I look forward to talking to Hillary and Megan and get their perspective. And, because you know, what goes into, I don't know. I don't even know what I don't know sometimes when it comes to the dynamics of picking shows and.
Yeah. Well, and every writer's room is different. So you listen to different creators talk about how things are structured, and like Community with the writer's room, from what I understand, was structured differently than New Girl. Like New Girl, Liz Merriweather and Brett Baer and Dave Finkel talked quite frequently about how they had 3 separate rooms. They had an A storyline, a B storyline room, and then a joke room. So that's like just one of the examples, I think, of the way that they structured specifically their show, but that not all comedies necessarily kind of structure their rooms the same way.
Yeah.
So it would definitely be interesting to kind of hear more about that, what that process is and what the process looks like. Because to me, it's interesting because I'm a writer.
Yeah.
So always like, oh, tell me about this. Tell me about your process.
Yeah. Oh, it sounded like what, very early on, they had a couple weeks of just beginning. Like they started with, who is this person? Who is Britta? And what are they? So they spent a long time kind of incubating the characters, but
Well, and you can definitely see that early on in the episodes. You can see because it, like I said, it's been a while since I rewatched Community in part or in full, and it has been a long time since I rewatched any of season one. And when I was rewatching the pilot, even I was like, oh, I forgot about so much of the stuff that was on the show, and there's an outside, and there's sunlight out there, and just you could tell even in Football Feminism and You, just that they're starting to kind of figure out with character pairings what works, and with what is funny, and who these characters are, and what makes them tick. And I think that you started to see that, especially like with Donald Glover and Danny Pudi being put together, and that really working and clicking. So still early on, they were, it's natural. They're trying to figure out who are these people and what makes them funny.
Yep.
And what makes them relatable and endearing to our audience as well.
Yep. And so Hillary also wrote Politics of Human Sexuality from the STD Fair.
Yes, you are correct, because I talked about Football Feminism and You. I did a rewatch and a podcast episode about it, and my guest, who is also an associate editor and for my website and a friend of mine, commented that that is one of her favorite episodes, and it's a very underrated episode. Yeah. And Hillary also wrote that, so you are correct. Thanks for dogging my memory.
It has one of my favorite lines. Abed says, if you're gonna have sex tonight, don't use condoms. Very, very amusing.
Especially like you forget, I forgot so much of the early season, because Community got really big after, and by big I mean like they realized after Modern Warfare, like, oh, they can start to do those kind of things, mm-hmm. and people respond to them. So it's often funny to me to go back and rewatch episodes like Football Feminism and You, or like just even the pilot or Spanish 101, and to remember how simple the stories were back then, like, and how nothing in this episode was crazy. Like,
yeah.
It was just a normal day or two or three at Greendale, and yet it is the first episode that hooked me.
There's nothing wacky, there's nothing genre about most of these beginning episodes.
There's no homages, there's no kind of shticks, and I mean that's one of the things that I kind of always go back and forth on, is that the show did Football Feminism and You is one of my favorite to reason, is because it's just so good all around. It's just it's so funny. It does so many things well, and it wasn't big or grand or an homage or some out of the box thing. And I always go back and forth on whether or not I kind of have nostalgia for these episodes, where I kind of miss season one. On the same hand, Remedial Chaos Theory is a stroke of genius, and that is way more concept-y, out of the box than this episode. But I think that that's kind of the game that the show had to play, and sometimes it did it well and sometimes it didn't do it so well, but balancing those very normal episodes with those very high concept episodes.
And they're just, they're giving a lot of this backstory, and they're working through the tension of the will they, won't they between, Jeff and Annie and Britta and those kinds of things. And so, this episode feels more, rom-com sitcom than some of the other ones. And I say that in a good way. I'm a fan of both of those things. But I think that's because we're getting this voice, and I think that's why it's important for us to stop and say, Hillary wrote this episode, so it's going to have just this, this voice that, they should stop the TV when you know, like, and they should make a point to say written by so-and-so. That's why I'm doing this podcast, because we have to know who wrote this, because it just provides so much depth and information to why the characters are going to act just slightly differently than they did in previous episodes.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the things that I mentioned too when I rewatched this, is that I won't say all of my favorite episodes of Community were written by women, because obviously Remedial Chaos Theory is probably still one of my favorites, and that's Chris McKenna, absolutely brilliant. But like, there is something to having a balanced writer staff and that those voices coming out in these episodes and in Megan Ganza's episodes. It's so necessary. And, you know, apart from the fact that Hillary Winston is literally in this episode for a brief second, the fact that she has her voice in this, I think, is so important. But that you can tell that she understood what made each of these characters funny. And I think that that's what makes this whole episode funny. The first scene that ever made me laugh out loud in a show is a conversation between Jeff and Troy on the football field where, you know, he's like, it's in your blood. And then they go back and forth and I just cracked up and I don't know what it was about it. I just was like, this is so funny because this is so these characters.
Yep.
And I'm getting a sense now of what each of these characters is. And then you've got Annie, you get her personality in this episode. This is a great episode where they found such a great use for Pierce with Dean Pelton. Like that, I was like, I'm not expecting this pairing, and yet it worked. Like it, and Britta and Shirley's story, which I will forever lament the fact that this is pretty much the only solid Britta Shirley story we really see. I mean, we kind of see some later on, but like just you can see that they were shaping Britta's character and Shirley's character. Not just as people, but like obviously as women too. And that's, I think, what Hillary Winston really brought to this, is just understanding that, you know, the comedy comes from the characters and the actors and their natural bent toward humor, and it really comes through. It's like I said, it's still one of my favorite episodes, and this was season 1 episode 6. And it still holds up as one of the greatest for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think you have a balance in my notes. I have, you know, Troy and Annie, Jeff and Troy, Britta and Shirley, you know, Dean and the Dean and Pierce. You have you know, all of these characters going back and forth, and you have, you know, just think like Troy and Annie. You know, Annie is and she's balancing between Jeff and Troy, and when she's with Jeff, she's formidable, and when she's with Troy, she's acting like she's back in high school.
I think early on, Jeff, you can just see him basically wanting to stir the pot with people and with the study group, so that kind of gets on your nerves after a while. You're like, okay, come on, just learn a lesson and let it stick. But I think as you chart his progress over the series and the fact that these people become the people who he tells them at the end of the series, like, you've changed my life forever and I love you. You get to watch that growth. And there are always going to be moments where I look at Jeff and I'm like, ugh, come on, early Jeff. Can't you just learn your lesson already? but, you know, I think because he's played by Joel McHale too, and Joel's a naturally pretty endearing person, and he has a way of portraying Jeff that is not just straight up jerk. Like, you see those moments of softness, you see the Milady Lord at the end of this episode, so you're like, okay, you're not all bad.
He was Charlie Sheen, it would be like, oh
yeah, God. No, exactly. But like, you know, it's Joel McHale, so you're like, okay, he's, you know, he has a way of understanding that, you know, Jeff Winger is not all bad. He's so used to being one way, and he's never had anyone force him to be another way. Like, his whole life has just been him doing this, and he's been fine until he meets people who go, that's not fine, and guess what? We're going to make you pay consequences for that. Then I think you start to see Jeff actually grow, and because he's forced to. But yeah, I mean, I think that I think that we're meant to not always like what Jeff does. But also in this episode, one of my favorite things is that you're also not meant to like what Annie does. Just because Jeff's selfishness is more prevalent doesn't mean that Annie's was any better. Like, Annie was trying to control and manipulate Troy into liking her, you know, and she wasn't doing it out of the goodness of her heart entirely. She had an ulterior motive. And Jeff called her out on it and was being like, you're not as good as I am yet. And I think that that is kind of what makes Community so great to me, is that each of these characters, in their own way, has things that about them that seem good, but then when taken too far are actually really selfish and not great at all. You know, they can be not all wonderful, and that's what makes them complex. And so just like Jeff is selfish in this episode, Annie is just as selfish too, and she's just better at hiding it. Or masking it in some ulterior motive.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and I think you've got to expect that Troy knows somewhat what Annie is doing. I mean,
he's not completely oblivious, but also, again, he's getting something out of this.
Yeah.
He's like getting the smartest person in class
to help him study,
you know? So I think Troy's just kind of like, whatever, like, you know, I'll throw her a bone, essentially. And again, kind of like what Britta does to Shirley in this episode. Oh, I was just throwing you a bone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pitying me, like, and that's rude, and I don't want that, you know? So I think they all kind of know that there's not entirely pure intentions here, but they also are getting the thing out of it they want to get out of it. Troy gets a good grade, and he gets time with Troy, and Jeff's hoping that he'll get, you know, his face removed from posters. So,
yeah. Yeah. Can you unpack that B story of as a female to us men, of like the women going in pairs?
Absolutely.
Can you be the translator for us?
It is so accurate. It is like, I was talking with my friend about this, and I think that that's what makes this episode so endearing, that side story of Britta and Shirley, because that is what we do. We seek support and we have emotional conversations. I was telling a person, I think I saw it like on Twitter or social media or something, about how women in the bathroom are like your greatest type women. If you're a woman and you ever go to like a bar or a club or, you know, somewhere like a restaurant at night, you will meet random women who will just compliment you in the bathroom or give you a pep talk or be the shoulder that you cry on. Or it's just an interesting kind of bond that happens. I don't know why. I cannot explain it to you. There's just something about women and community in the bathroom. And I love this story. And all of the women that I've talked to who are fans of Community who love this, we all are like, this is such an accurate representation of what it's like to be a woman and to have female friendship, because it's such a brilliant move on the show's part to make Britta that focus. Because, like, come on, Annie's, you know, you can kind of tell even just by brief conversations that Annie, though she might have been an outcast in high school, like, Annie still had female friendships, mm-hmm. and you kind of get that sense. And Shirley is very much like Shirley and Annie, kind of because they sit next to each other, you get to see that sense of like their little dynamic. But Britta's never really had that relationship before. So Britta doesn't understand that this is a friendship move. She thinks, oh, it's just this woman from study group who I'm trying to throw a bone to, and Shirley sees it as she's rejecting my friendship. Like, and it takes it very personally. And I think at this point in the series too, with knowing that, you know, Shirley's divorced, and I'm sure that people pitied Shirley for a long time, she doesn't want people's pity. She doesn't need people's pity. What she wants is to genuinely be a friend with Britta. And Britta squanders that at first because she's never been taught the intricacies of female friendship. And she's never really had those relationships before. And so you watch her throughout the series kind of try and struggle with and learn those dynamics. And even like Jeff calling her out, like, do you not understand like what this is? And her being genuinely confused is, you know, an indicator that this is abnormal for her. But I just find it so, it's such an endearing story to me because it's so accurate, and also because it's such a great look at early Britta and her development, and early Shirley and her development.
Yeah,
and then, of course, Annie.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. First, I want to say that men who are listening to this, I think it's great to know that, like, that's real. And good for you women that that's, you have that for each other. Guys are like, you don't talk in the bathroom, I straight.
Yeah, no, I literally am reading a book about, like, that basically affirms that, like, that men, it's an unspoken rule that men do not talk.
We shun the guys who don't, and especially the guys who don't wash their hands. Those are, that exists anyway. But it's great that that's real, you know, it comes from real reality, and you know, Hillary brought that into the episode, and I wanted to ask you about, because I following the Discord, following the subreddit, and getting some of the conversations that I think someone lamented, you know, how early Britta was, you know, smart, cool, all these things, and then she gets dumb and wanted your thoughts. And, you know, I'll give you my opinion real quick, and then you can deconstruct it. I actually think that she's been full of crap the whole time, but she she's very thoughtful, and I think she just has this facade that she's put up, this, you know, I follow Radiohead and, you know, and those kinds of things, you know, like, and yeah, I don't think she's got the credit that she's not developed like she should have been. And, you know, she becomes a punching bag often, but, you know, I would argue that I think she's always been that. And there was just this facade that made us this illusion that she was something else. And anyway, I'd love to hear what you think about Britta and her.
I mean, I'll try and make this short, because I could talk for hours about the female characters on this show.
That's why I'm talking with you. It's great.
How they were done dirty. I mean, just as a context, like, I told you, I did a brief look at the writer's room and episodes that were written by women in my favorite shows, and Community was the one that kind of spurred my curiosity in that. And, you know, in the first two seasons, half of the episodes in those, you know, half of those seasons, in those two seasons, about half of the episodes were written by women, like, or co-written by women. And then that dropped from season three on to no more than 27%. No, I guess 31% is the highest in season four, 4 out of 13 of the episodes. But by the end of the series, 2 out of 13 episodes were written by women, and that's 15% of, you know. So I feel like in order to have the conversation about, like, the women on the show, I always go back to, okay, well, is there representation in the writer's room or in these episodes? Is that maybe part of the problem? And my argument is, of course, that that is part of the problem, that representation does matter in writer's rooms. And, you know, it's not the end all be all, but I think that it's not the end all be all in the case of Britta specifically. But I do think that Britta was, as I rewatched the early seasons, she was jaded for sure. She had seen a lot of life. And she really, in the first season, her goal was to protect the study group from Jeff. Like, she, in the pilot, kicks Jeff out and is like, yeah, well, thanks for admitting to us why you're here. We don't want you here anymore. Like, leave us alone, because now that you've admitted you're a terrible person, I don't want to have anything to do with you. Because I think she's seen too much of life to know that that's who Jeff is. She still has this softness about her, though, that's an endearing softness. Even in the episode where she tries to pull an April Fool's, like, you know, there's just stories where you're like, gosh, Britta, you're trying so hard. Yep. And I think over the seasons, we definitely see her dumbed down. I mean, Jeff makes a comment, you seem smarter when I met you later on. and that kind of always breaks my heart. Like, yeah, she kind of was. And now her name is used to make a small mistake. I think that she's always been, you know, even in the early episodes talking about her, you know, activist days and that kind of thing. I think she's always been someone who wants to change the world. She really does want to make the world better. She just doesn't really know what cause to jump on. She kind of jumps all over the place with it, and she kind of tries to pretend that she doesn't need people, even though she does. And that's the prime example in this episode, because she basically like rebuffs Shirley and says, "Well, I was just throwing you a bone." And Shirley kind of breaks down that wall until Britta's like, "I've peed alone my whole life. You know, I've never really had female friends." And she kind of, you see that vulnerability come out. But then, you know, later on in the show, she just kind of, I think once they took away, and maybe this is just me posturizing, it might not be the case, but I really think that the Jeff, Britta, Annie of it all, kind of the show not understanding how to navigate that, kind of screwed over both of those women, because just like Britta kind of went from being like this idealistic, you know, person who kind of is endearing to a dumbed down version of that, Annie would be either a child or like a 50-year-old woman, depending on what they wanted her to be in an episode, you know? And so I think once Jeff and Britta kind of was kaput, they really were like, "Well, what do we do with Britta now? I guess we'll just make her the butt of everyone's joke." So that's what she becomes, which is my theory, is that that is what ended up happening. But I do agree with it. I think toward the end of the series, she starts to find herself again. And especially, even though I'm not a huge fan of season six, like Britta being able to find her place toward the end of the show is evident. But I think it took a long, really bumpy way to get there.
I think the same could be said about Chang.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
You know, and I don't even think that's, you know, because I think what I was going to say is, I don't even think that's necessarily because, you know, there wasn't representation, you know, of people of color in the room. Well, no, where I do think that's the case probably with Shirley, as much as not having women in the writer's room. Yeah. So,
Yeah. But I'm glad that you said Chang too, because I was trying to remember that all of Chang's different identities in all of the seasons. I'm like, they put him he's all over the map as to what Chang was supposed to be for this show. But you know, I'm gonna say I love season one Chang as like teacher Chang. I feel like is always gonna be my favorite one. Because it just works.
Yeah, I think that what I would have liked to see, and I actually posted this on the Reddit, that I actually think that they should have brought him back, you know, like he went to City College and all he needed was his, you know, teaching certificate. And now he can teach whatever he wants. And season three would have been great for him to be a teacher. I do really like the noir episode where he's doing the monologue and playing the saxophone and that kind of the episode where he burns down the kitchen or whatever. That's a really, really great episode. You know, I think we've dived a lot into the angles that I think I wanted to talk about with, it needs to be said, I wanted you to have a voice in it because I wanted to at least listen to the part, you know, your perspective on the writer's room, the representation, the female characters. And I think if there's people listening, and I was just thinking about like, you know, I would hope that it's not just something that people, I hope most people who are community fans are, but who knows, you know, you like it for whatever you like it. I hope people don't like huff and puff and like get upset at these conversations. Cause I think there's like, there's a necessary, like, you know, are we thinking about the ramifications of X, Y, and Z? I think in general, we have to remember that they're just people on a pace, you know, paper, that they're trying to do their best to, you know, from, as we said, writer's room, that's changeover and a very tumultuous TV show. I mean, like, never in the history has a writer, you know, the showrunner come back. So I think some of it is we have to look at that perspective, that there was never continuity, even in the beginning, in who was running the show. They had three different showrunners, and basically between Dan, Neil Goldman and Garrett Donovan and the Russo brothers. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's happening. So, but yeah. I don't want to discount what you said either, because it's absolutely important for us to go. There's a reason why this episode was so good in nailing these things, because we had a woman writer. So it's like, can we look at both of these things at the same time and not like chop off her hands, get huff and puff anyway.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think, I started writing about this show because I wanted an outlet to write about a thing that I loved. And I'm going to butcher the quote, but I think that, there's a TV critic, Ryan McGee, who said something a long time ago that always stuck with me. It's, knowing why you love something is way more important than loving something. And I think that Community taught me how to look at television and to look at that show and go, okay, there's this thing I love. Why do I love it? Okay, there's this thing I don't like. Why don't I like it? And, you know, I've had people over the years come at me over reviews. They're like, oh, you just hate this thing. I'm like, no, I love this thing. That's why I'm being critical of it right now, because I know it can do better, because I've seen it do better, or because I wish this thing happened, because, you know, then it would be consistent continuity-wise. And you know, friends and I have talked about, like, as great as Football Feminism and You is, we never really see some of these threads picked back up again. You know, you never really see a whole lot of Shirley and Britta stories again. You never really see, you know, in episodes where Pierce and Abed have a one-off story, that go anywhere. And so for Community for me was the place where I finally learned how to look at the thing that I loved, but also say that there are things that I don't like about it. And that's okay. It's not bad. It doesn't mean that you hate the show. It doesn't mean that, the people who only praise it are better, because I think there's danger in only praising something and not being able to see its faults and not being able to see what it could have done better or what it did wrong. And, you know, I think that this is the show that taught me how to do that. And I'm incredibly grateful, because this is such a great show to do that with, because there are so many things that were so good about it. And, yeah, you know, we're not sitting here going everything is terrible, but there's always room to look at the thing, especially 10 years later, and go, yeah, I loved that. I wish that this was better, and I wish it could have, you know, done this more. I wish that there were more women later on in the series, and I think it impacted it. It doesn't mean that I'm saying I hate it, and it doesn't mean I'm less of a fan. Yeah, I think that there's room. I think we need to learn in today, especially in today's age, how to have those discourses and say, look, this piece of art is good, but I also don't like this thing, without being berated and called not a real fan of something. Mm. You know, I think that there's a danger in that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just had a conversation with a very conservative uncle, and I got him to support reparations. And that only happened, so let that sink in. But it happened through conversation, it happened through nuance, it happened through, like, looking at this from all different angles and saying, you know, but what could happen, you know, what is the possibility? It means cutting off the cynicism and looking at it from an optimist standpoint, but it also means looking at it from a realist standpoint and saying, but what could it be? So,
Yeah, exactly. There's room for that. I think that there should be more of that discourse of, like, you know, just because someone is critical of something doesn't mean you get to point a finger and go, aha, you really aren't a true fan, you hate it, therefore I'm going to dismiss everything you're saying. But it's hard. But I think that this show taught me how to do that, and it gave me a community, pun intended, of people to do it with, even years later. So I'm incredibly grateful that you've allowed me the space to talk about that here.
Oh, too. You'll be back. But this was great. It was great. No, and I think, I'm glad that you had a good time, and I'm learning a ton. I lean into these kinds of conversations to figure out and go, okay, yeah, okay, now I can see a little bit different. And I think it's a really good segue to talk as a community fan, because you are 100%, here are my standard questions I'm asking people. This is the most controversial one. Season 4, do you watch it or do you ignore it?
Oh my gosh, I've had this conversation multiple times this week. I'm not going to apologize for the fact that I don't think season 4 was as bad as everyone thinks it was.
Yeah, totally.
So I do rewatch season 4, not all of it. I think I skipped probably a few here and there. The puppet episode I definitely skipped.
Really?
But yeah, huh. I hated that episode when I watched it at first. So I just kind of pretend that one doesn't exist.
I'm a music person, so like you threw music at me and like...
Oh, I love Sarah Bareilles too, and that's what gets me is because I'm like, oh man, I have to miss Sarah Bareilles. But no, I mean, there are certain episodes in that one that I think I rewatch a whole lot.
What about there's the Sophie B. Hawkins episode?
I don't think I've rewatched that one in a while.
Yeah.
So like, it's hard to say, like, when I rewatch, this is so bad. I mean, this is also what I think a lot of people do. I do this with all of my shows, is that I kind of have a tendency to skip around and it's like, oh, I'll start in a random episode in season 4, and then I'll just kind of pick and choose which ones I watch next. So it's been a while since I've done the whole rewatch as a series.
Well, it's really hard because I don't want to get too far ahead of myself because I'm trying to watch, you know, the episode, you know, 2-3 times and then, you know, get my head straight with what I want to talk about, and you know, but I'm like, no, I want to go watch, you know, especially with Christmas time, I was like, I want to go watch you know, all the Christmas episodes a bunch.
I definitely did that. I mean, that was ahead of me recording a podcast for it specifically too, but it was like, it's taking everything in me to not just go, I really want to go rewatch like this chunk, because I'm trying to kind of see them fresh, you know, and it's hard to not skip around when I do that. But
so we're on the same page. We may not agree on all the episodes, but that's okay.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, no, I really like the puppet one, and I like the there's anyway, I'll skip past this, but so the other things are, I, you know, kind of want to know, like, there's a reason we love this show is because we're connecting with these characters, and you know, so which characters do you think define you, like, you know, who do you most relate with?
Oh, this is without a doubt something I already asked Twitter a long time ago. And by a long time, I mean like maybe less than 6 months ago. I posted 3 fictional characters and I said, okay, Twitter, tell me which one do you think I am most like? And the resounding response was Annie Edison. I will always, Annie is my forever fave from the show. Yeah. I will always relate to her. I am very type A. I'm very driven. I'm very idealistic. So Annie is without a doubt my girl.
Hey, that's how we keep the lights on. I married one of those, so I married Annie, a blonde Annie, but actually her name is Annie, which is funny. And my name is Alex, so technically I guess that makes me Starburns. Anyway. Do you have any, another question is, do you have any memes? Like, what, do you have any, like, go-to, like, quotes or memes from,
oh my gosh.
Too many
from
to count.
The show?
Yeah.
Oh, from the show in general?
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm trying to think. 100%, I was talking about this, I think one of the funniest things to me is that during like the 2016 election cycle, a lot of people were posting their remedial chaos theory just of Troy walking into the apartment that's on fire.
Yeah.
And I wanted to respond to every single person who's ever used that gif. Like, do you know where this comes from? Are you a community fan? Because if not, I need you to watch the show.
Yeah.
So I use that a lot. I feel like I quote like Troy's "My whole brain is crying" a lot too. I used, when I used to work at my old job, I had a whole file of like bookmarks saved, like that were just like reaction gifs. And so I feel like Troy's my emotions,
yeah,
that he has too. Yeah, I feel like, and around Christmas time, I'm not gonna lie, I always get songs from regional holiday music stuck in my head. So I will always sing "Teach Me How to Understand Christmas" without fail. Without fail, it just gets stuck in my head, and no one, not a whole lot of people in my like day-to-day life watch Communities or ever watched it, so I can't even sing it because they will not understand what I'm referencing.
Yeah, I have a friend who grew up Jehovah's Witness, so I send him
Oh, the rapper. It's just
the
so great. It's so brilliant.
Awesome. Do you have a favorite episode, maybe, that you can?
Oh gosh.
I mean, that's
Okay.
hard, but.
It's so hard. It depends on my mood. Remedial Chaos Theory, I already said, is just it's just brilliant. Football Feminism in You is a go-to for me. Debate 109 is also a go-to for me. But Conspiracy Theories and Interior Design, you're noticing that these are Jeff Annie episodes, but they're all just brilliantly written. And the always around Christmas time, Autism Uncontrollable Christmas, and regional holiday music. I also watched Glee for a long time. And so while I was watching, while regional holiday music aired while Glee was still on the air, so I just found it to be just delightful on multiple levels.
Did
So,
you know that Glee literally means glee?
yes, I did. Did you know that everything is cooler when cameras are spinning?
That's true.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that those are like some of my favorites where I just watch and I'm like, I just feel so happy about this. So.
Excellent. Well, Jen, thank you so much for being on Six Seasons in a Podcast. I look
Yeah.
forward
Thank you
to
so much for having me.
Definitely. This is great. I look forward to let's do it again sometime. It sounds like there's a contender for talking about some of these season two episodes. So let's try to make that
Oh,
happen. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah.